Okay, now we'll get back to the importance of Antarctica. When this one explorer wanted to go down there and see what was down there and explore this continent, which he should have been allowed to do. We explored other continents and were able to travel back and forth. There was a column written by Drew Pearson that reported, they said they intend to tell Admiral Richard Byrd, the famous polar explorer, that they don't want this party who wanted to go down and investigate the area, they don't want him to head the upcoming Antarctic explorations. They favor a junior officer who Byrd took under his wing, then Commander Finn Rone, R-O-N-N-E, instead. The Navy is still backing Admiral Byrd. He has strong support in the Senate, where his brother, Virginia's potent Harry Byrd, and his in-laws, the long-faced Senator Leverett Saltonstall, block funds for the Antarctic expeditions for other people. This was written up in a book that Drew Pearson exposed the fact that Admiral Byrd and his brother in the Senate were holding up the explorations of other persons who wanted to get down to Antarctic. And this book is evidently, I got sections of it copied, I don't have the whole book yet, is the politics of who can get down there, who can see the facilities, and who can explore. And then the author says, in 1961, I went on the lecture circuit, and in Hamburg, Germany, the U.S. information officer informed me that there's a family living there I would like to meet. His name was Captain Alfred Richer, R-I-T-S-C-H-E-R, and I recognized the name immediately. In 1938 and 39, he led a German expedition to the coastal areas off Queen Maud Land in the Norwegian sector of Antarctica. Now, that's the man whose name I mentioned is on the maps of the National Geographic, printed, I have two copies of 1957 and 1963. He's the man that Adolf Hitler sent down to Antarctica to stake a territory that he could go to in case the going got rough in Europe after he intended to invade Poland. And the stories that I've put on the air or the information I've had were these ships from Norway that escorted them down there later. So it was in the Norwegian section, which fits in this book, sections I received this week, fit in with the map and the material that I have that preceded before I received this about the trip. This fellow was in Germany and met Mr. Richer, and he was the fellow who was sent by Hitler to discover and claim land in the Antarctic. The expedition did an excellent job, the Germans that Hitler sent. As I learned after World War II ended, a friend of mine with the Department of Interior said there are volumes in his office, two volumes of the Schwabenland expedition. Now, there's no map since World War II that has the German section, even though it was staked out and had a name, and Germany is still Germany after World War II, East and West Germany. But Captain Richer spoke with some English, and he talked about his flights and so forth, and about his trips to Antarctica, which I think is interesting because the fellow that finally went down there was able to explore, was able also to meet this Richer who had staked out this land for the Germans in the Norwegian section down in Antarctica. And as I say, they worked with this North American Newspaper Alliance, which came out of Harvard. Priscilla Johnson worked for the Soviet Department at Harvard, where a large group of the people who were involved in the Navy intelligence part of Lee Harvey Oswald's assignment in the Soviet Union when he was sent over there came from Harvard University. And Priscilla Johnson was one of those. Later, she came back to this country and wrote Marina and Lee, and as soon as Lee was assassinated, she swept right in and took care of Marina Oswald and literally had her mind controlled for a long, long time. Marina doesn't trust Priscilla now. That finally wore off. But these people, Curtis LeMay, military, Admiral Byrd, the Newspaper Alliance of America, the secretive actions going on all the time since 1933 down there have been printed somewhat. I'm reading and sharing with you published material, but it has never been analyzed by the major news media or exposed or questions asked about what is going on down there. As a matter of fact, this week in our Carmel area, they had a program that I'm sure is going around the country on the Saudi Arabian families in Saudi Arabia, and it showed the villas that they have and how water used to be brought in by donkeys, and now they have large estates with water, and On this program, they said that the water is desalinated and they have large compounds of family homes. Well, National Geographic says that they use desalinated water for the living down in Antarctica, and Saudi Arabia uses it. And that, again, brings up the question of how come some people are starving from drought and other people are surviving very nicely on this technology that we're not allowed to know about or to be shared all over the world. Now, there were other articles on Argentine. The Wall Street Journal had one this week. Argentine's nuclear weapon capability estimated to be closer than thought. You better believe. And I mentioned the NBC program of taking the parts of the German atomic bombs down to Argentina, and a top German scientist working down there with them and going back and forth. There was a New York Times story this week about a murder in Argentina stirs political activists. And then it tells about over 11,000 people just killed or disappeared in the past few years. It's been more than that. But just last week, they abducted another person who had been working in a labor union, but they just swept in and took her away. She was a one-time member of the outlawed Socialist Workers Party, outlawed, and they just took her away. She'll never be seen again. Another story in the New York Times, Argentina debates penguin slaughter. They're considering killing 48,000 penguins. If the factories are built already, they're doing it. There's no considering that tells where the factories are. And they're making gloves and purses, and then they said that the protein is 83.5% of the penguin meat, that's a lot of protein. They asked how you're going to kill these animals with this factory there, because so many people have objected to the clubbing of the baby seals up in Canada. And the question was asked, and the answer was they thought it would be chemicals. So if you kill the penguins with chemicals and then you sell the protein for meat, be careful. I mean, that's it. And I'm sure that's another form of genocide if you want to do it. So look out where you're buying your purses and gloves pretty soon, if you'll know the difference. And this is one thing that's going down there, is the chemical slaying a penguin, making products, selling meat, and getting rid of people at the same time. You've got to give these people credit. I mean, they're not dumb. When I say know your enemy, the average person has a mentality of, say, the Shah's wife, and that's not very high. And you have to read these stories in these newspapers like the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times. Years ago when I was on KLRB, when I first started here, it'll be 12 years starting the program this coming June, people would say, where are your sources of information? And if I gave the Berkeley Barb, the LA Free Press, the Underground Press, or Overthrow, they'd say, oh, well, you can't believe that. You could believe it. Everything that I read or put on the air, I believed and as checked out as far as I could was true. And just because it was printed by an alternative lifestyle didn't mean it wasn't true. So now that all those free presses are out of business, the Berkeley Barb and all the counterculture, most of them, the newspaper, incidentally, the City on a Hill up at Santa Cruz is doing a good job, a darn good job of articles and exposés of corporations such as Bechtel and so forth. But there aren't many doing this anymore, and now when I give sources like the Washington Post and New York Times, people still they don't ask where are your sources, but they're not seeing the stories that are right in front of them that have tremendous implications. I remember the dildrene in the school lunch programs that causes cancer that was coming out of the chicken farms in Mississippi going to Illinois and Detroit. And we could safely say, well, 6 or 8 years from now, those kids will have cancer, and a big uprate of cancer in blacks. So if the penguins get there doing in with poisons, and then the food is set out to eat, somebody else is going to suffer years from now, and you can be sure of that. A gentleman involved and very much involved with the National Geographic that has published 70 to 80 articles on Antarctica passed away this last week, Melville Grosvenor. And the interesting thing about his life were the details of his work. He graduated from the U.S. Naval Academy. He was very interested in Antarctica. That was one of his favorite subjects, and also in conservation, but in the Antarctica. And he was the one who launched the expeditions to Mount Everest and Antarctica. And his great-grandfather, Gardner Hubbard, began the National Geographic. But his grandfather, his mother's father, was Alexander Graham Bell, the inventor of the telephone. So the family that have the National Geographic came from an exploratory family. They were interested in space, polar, and undersea research. Those were their hobbies, oceanography and so forth. So they have followed very carefully and on their board of directors, as I say, are people very interlocking with the intelligence community, with the secrecy, including that Earl Warren as part of that, National Geographic, and Curtis LeMay, and the head of Pan Am. I mentioned them last week. Quite a list of board of directors in addition to the scientists. But when these men pass away and you read the obituaries, you get a certain view of history that fills in some of the pieces. Ted Zalk had an article in the New York Times. The Soviets' interest in the Falklands may signal a new hard line. And what he's saying is that so far, to paraphrase it, we have attacked the Soviet Union for about 40 years. And before the end of World War II, we ended up with them as allies in World War II. And the minute the war was over, we have attacked them verbally, socially, economically, treated them like vermin and lice. And what they're saying is the Soviet Union may stop being nice guys when Brezhnev goes down. And we better be particular that when the Soviets change, and they have an interest down there in the Falklands also, and they have an interest in Argentina. And the two things they have in common with Argentina, besides wheat, are the way we tell them how to run their country with human rights, while we do very little for blacks, prisoners, and Indians in our country. So this article, Ted Zalk is one of the better writers, and he says the Soviets may have a new hard line, and what you and I are going to have to live with were all the lies and the assaults on those people for all these years. If we sat back and took it, then we have to sit back and take their anger, no matter who they line up with. And now the chickens are going to come home to roost, and that's why this Antarctic subject is so interesting, because all of the chicanery and all the lies and all the antagonisms are causing people that we thought were allies to line with us, and they're going against us. And countries like Cuba, where the communists are killed in Argentina, are lining up with Argentina, and the way the allies are teaming is the subject of another article this week that is interesting. Now, the Spotlight, a newspaper put out by Liberty Lobby, has an article by Mitchell Werbel. He's worked for the CIA. He's a white Russian. He's worked with the Nazis from World War I, World War II, headed up assassination teams, created those silencers. He's writing an article, the U.S. must reaffirm their support for the integrity of the Americas. We must line up with the Antarctica, Falkland, Argentine connection. The U.S. must act forthwith and consider our alliance with Argentine and break from the British. This is where the power is going, down to that southern cone. Adolf Hitler said, give me South America and I'll own America. That's what he said, forget America for the time being. The Washington Post has another article on the Soviets by a different writer. The Soviets expect gains from the Falkland crisis. They will have gains. A story from the San Francisco Chronicle, Venezuela aid to Argentina, reported in the United States. Another one, Peru, Bolivia, and Venezuela back Argentina. Spotlight had another article, who profits from the Argentine crisis? A question and answer. Now, this is from the far right wing, and they want to keep the Falklands. It's a story about keeping the Falkland Islands British Association, and there's an interview. Why are the Falkland Islands so important? Answer, they are a strategic position covering the dependencies, Antarctic territory and South Atlantic, so coveted by the Soviet Union as a naval base and by African countries and so forth. The waters around them are excellent fishing, and there's large oil fields, the Falklands, and the dependencies of the British Antarctic territories. There's extensive valuable minerals, multinational corporations, uranium deposits, and so forth, and energy sources. Who is the enemy is one of the questions asked. Is the real enemy is not a nation, but a member of organizations. Now, they go back and they want to blame a early conference of one world people starting in 1860. It's a simplistic answer, but their explanation goes back to before even the Soviet Union existed. It says, what is the attitude of the British Foreign Office? It says, when the Whitefish Authority and the Falklanders worked out a plan for a fishing industry that could be set up and fish flown to England to replace the fishing industry destroyed before, the Foreign Office vetoed the project. Britain wouldn't buy the fish from their own Falkland people when they had a chance to do it. It said when Shell and Esso were drilling in the oil fields outside the Falkland, the British refused to allow a British company to drill for oil. And the point about this is that I think that Britain and the United States have been undermined to turn the oil and turn the minerals over to a particular group of people. And those people are not in the best interest of the individual countries, but a handful that have nestled down in this southern area. It says, this interview said that the Foreign Office has been negotiating under the ground to turn over the Falklands to the Argentine and encouraging Argentine to hasten the invasion. And the last question asked is, what is Alexander Haig's position? And the answer, as with the British Foreign Office, the State Department in Britain has been filled, and in the United States, with people whose allegiance is not to their country. In this matter, Mr. Haig is acting as an agent of a multinational and the United, not the United States of America. Now, Haig is the president of United Technologies. He was making $1 million a year before he took on the job as Secretary of State. United Technologies will make the engines for the spaceships, the space satellite stations. The Attorney General is the Mr. William French Smith is the attorney for Rockwell that makes the motors for the space colonies and space stations. These people represent business, and even Liberty Lobby says that the State Department has no allegiance. They are agents of multinationals, not the United States of America. And I have said for many, many years that Alexander Haig and Henry Kissinger and Mr. Brzezinski serve something other than the United States. You could take them all and throw them out, or hang them by their heels like Mussolini, which really should be done someday instead of giving them the dignity of interviews and so forth. It's a disgusting case the way they have thrown this country around since World War II and brought us to the brink of so many calamities. Another article in the Los Angeles Times, caught in our own noose. The first mistake for Haig was an alliance with the Argentine military. And it goes about how close he was, how Argentine plotted a coup in Bolivia that actually was encouraged by Washington, that Washington encouraged Argentine in every matter of internal affairs, and that Haig was instigating these people to go ahead and take these moves. And the article is called Caught in Our Own Noose. Another story, the Falklands are a missile test ground. The military doesn't have to lose at any angle. They can keep getting appointments when they have a war. They get new medals, new stars. They sit home. They don't do the fighting. You don't see the big brass out there in those freezing waters and waves. And this is first post-World War II naval campaign. This is what Project Paperclip was about. This is what the Nazi rocket scientists, the missile scientists, Boeing, Lockheed, General Dynamics, you name it, the Fairchilds, this is what they wanted. They're making these toys. How many toys can you have before you start testing them? And another story by Joseph Kraft on Atlantic War, how it could start. It said, first, we should have let them know there was no separation of us between Britain instead of encouraging Argentina as the aggressor. And it goes into the problem of losing now our allies, the Brazilians, the Mexicans, Venezuelans, Chileans, and so forth, that we tried to act neutral, and everybody knows which side the Reagan administration has been on. Ever since Reagan's inauguration, there was an article last week, the most expensive inauguration in history. I think it cost $14 or $16 million, but a big hunk of it came from these people that are down there, such as Licio Gelli and the fascists from Italy that have dual citizenship between Argentina and Italy that are down there now. Another story in the Los Angeles Herald, it's going to be another Vietnam, Argentine and the U.S. and the Falklands. Mario Obledo from California Democratic primary was running for governor in the primary. Latin American, he's favoring, I'm for Argentine very much. He's trying to act as a liberal Democrat in California. You know how long he'd last in Argentine? He'd have his hands and fingers cut off in 10 minutes. I mean, off with him. He would be one of the 350,000 missing people, or recently the 11,000 dead. Obledo would last 10 minutes in Argentine, and with his political stance that he's trying to run for. But in this case, he's favoring Argentine. It's so easy to do that from California in the position you're in. Spotlight also has a story, Britain terrified by gaucho bomb. We told you an article last February the 8th, Argentina had nuclear capability and how it was achieved. And they say now the media is trying to blame the Nazis behind it. It's not just Nazis alone. It's a lot of big money that has allowed the Germans to transfer this technology from Germany down to Argentina. Sure, the German scientists and the Nazis designed it, but it's very important to know that not Nazis alone have made this mess in these various countries. Another story, Britain no longer rules the waves. There could be a time when America no longer rules the waves. And from the London Times, the perils of shuttling. I've been getting the London Times, the Sunday London Times. What made the Hague mistake controversial, his mission controversial, even before he got his policy instructions for even-handedness, was that the Reagan administration wanted to give this trip to George Bush. It would have made sense to keep Hague in Washington, but Hague succeeded in persuading the president to let him undertake the task. Apart from his deep concern of a risk of war, he saw in it a dramatic opportunity to strengthen his own position. How long does Hague have to be the superstar on top of the television, carrying every battle going into Libya, going into Poland, going into Argentina, surrounding Castro, pushing the elections in El Salvador, this outright murderer and fascist? But Hague, according to the London Times, he wants to be in there. As the world watched him super shuttling from Washington to London to Buenos Aires in London with fascination and uneasiness and watching his physical stamina, Hague carried on heroically, even taking time for an hour's tennis after reporting to the president. And, of course, we all saw him playing tennis down in Argentina. Another story from the New York Times, the details of Hague's mission and when he realized it would fail. He realized it would fail several weeks before it failed. That's the truth. But he pretended that he was being the great diplomat, that he was the mediator, because then if things go down, he will get the credit for having tried. And that Hague is the fellow who thought he was in control of the government when Reagan was shot, and he's still pretty much running the scene. And there's a full-page ad in the Washington Post from a group. They call themselves the TFP. I don't know if you've ever heard of them or not. The American Society for the Defense of Tradition, Family, and Property. Now, this group first originated down in Brazil. John Kennedy was murdered November 22, 1963, with a large connection of Nazis from Argentina, New Orleans, Dallas, and Washington in New Jersey. And after Kennedy was killed in 63, in 1964, the government changed hands in Brazil. A military dictatorship was put into power. And at that time, there were articles about an organization that called themselves the TFP, Tradition, Family, and Property. Now, I have an article going back. It was from Reuters on this organization, how it was formed. It was founded in 1960, the same year that Kennedy ran against Richard Nixon, and got the nomination. And that time, they knew he had to be killed. The master worked 20 years, planned the TFP, and it was against socialist tendencies in South America, and it combined the South American countries, and it was called the Brotherhood, simply like the Bormann Brotherhood, the Nazi Odessa Network, or the Brotherhood in South Africa. They called themselves the Brotherhood. They were founded in 1960, and they took over, and they were instrumental in Brazil in this military junta. They have jeweled crucifixes, palaces, priceless art. They call themselves the Hall of the Knights, thrones with wood carvings, and visitors in South America and Brazil from Chile, Cuba, Argentina, Uruguay, and the United States. Their symbol is the serpent's head. It's similar to the SLA, which I said the serpent's head was used because of the Nazi connections. Well, they serviced in Brazil. This was just at the time after the Kennedy assassination. They'd been working there since 1960, Tradition, Family, and Property. Now they're running a full-page ad in the Washington Post. Russian influence in the Falkland crisis put out by the this Tradition, Family, and Property, and they're objecting to the Soviet Union contaminating a fascist junta that they've set up since 1960, and all of a sudden Russia comes in and says, we'll be your ally. And they're shaking their heads and they're saying, what in the heck is going on? And this article is subtitle is The Independence of Catholic Argentina in Regard to the Effective Sovereignty over the Island Territories. And what the organization is saying, if in order to take the Falklands, you take Russia as your ally, then leave the Falklands with Great Britain. That they've done all this work with their armed forces, with the South American fascists. They don't call themselves fascists. They call themselves God-fearing, and they love God. And they say Argentina is a country predominantly Catholic, and the first commandment is the law of God, to love God. And if for love of territorial integrity we accept a coalition with the communists, who are the enemy of God, forget the Malvinas and go home. And it's an interesting thing because they've set this groundwork for so many years, from 1960 to 1982, that many years of getting South America into a Catholic bloc, and they say that the Argentines are 90% Catholic. And how can they sell the wheat? How can they trade with the Soviet Union, share technology? Well, the truth is that the church doesn't matter, the state doesn't matter, the country doesn't matter, money matters. And many times on this program, I've quoted those marvelous lines of Paddy Chayefsky in Network, where he has the man saying, you know, there are no nations, there's corporations. The ITT and Dow Chemical and the petroleum corporations and so forth, the communications, the multinational corporations are where it's at. If the United States doesn't sell wheat to the Soviet Union, the Soviet Union buys it from Argentina. It simply has nothing to do with boundaries anymore, or who prays to who, or what God they have. The name of the game is money. There is no God except making a buck. That's how the Vatican went broke to the tune of $26 million a year, by blending their money with the Gambino family and organized crime to make more money. And this organization worked so hard to get almost what they wanted, and all of a sudden their allies are Cuba down there and the Soviet Union. And it's really funny because they're suffering from an identity crisis. What's happened to our American organization, our international organization in defense of tradition, family, and property? And the truth is that in order to make a buck, in order to survive, people are doing it in outrageous ways. They've lost their principles. They will trade and deal. And that is the name of the game. And that is the reality of the world today. The old alliances don't matter. If we can do business with South America and make more bucks, some of us would turn our back on Great Britain and our common goals. If they torture, if they kill, if they just don't like communists, we're their friends. But if they trade with communism, we're left with nothing. We fought Russia, now we're fighting Argentina. We have few friends, we'll have fewer as it goes on. This country has lost its scruples. I believe the worst that I saw in my lifetime was when John Kennedy was murdered and nobody cared who killed him, and began the wheeling and dealing, escalating with the war in Vietnam. Well, I wanted to do a lot more, but the Malvinas are really important. The Falklands are important because they're necessary to study for what the major media has kept from you in terms of technology, of military hopes for the area, how it'll be controlled, because the goal of Adolf Hitler and the Fourth Reich and the Bormann Brotherhood was to control the airways, the satellites, the space stations are more important even than any single armies. And those are the places where the launching can be done. Admiral Byrd said it in the 40s. It's been proven and tested down there, and that is why it's an important area. Next week we'll get on and update some of the more current news, but this is an important area to study, and so I've dwelled on it for the last 4 weeks to get the ground rules of the game. It is a mess. And it will get worse, but it's interesting to study it and read some of these books on the subjects as it goes on. In the meantime, you take care of yourselves, and this is Mae Brussel in Carmel, California.
This has been World Watchers International with noted conspiracy investigator Mae Brussel. This program originates from Carmel, California.